Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to the podcast and to our second installment of this Porkfest micro series, chronicling all the events from Porkfest in which I participated. Anyway, this is all audio stuff that I have. Of course, there's a lot of video too, but here we just deal with the audio portion. I'm sure there's going to be ways for you to find a video of whatever you want. This is a very well documented event. So in the second installment, this is from June 19th. I think this was the second or third day. And I was asked to give a speech on surviving government school. But what I thought should be incorporated into that is overcoming government school. And I asked Jake DeSillis from The Voluntary Life to come up on stage and join me, and he does about halfway through. Now, you should know that I've edited this show down a little bit just for, you know, that podcast feel, no long silences, and there will be a full video version of this because it happened in the big pavilion where everything was being documented by three cameras and live edited, and all of that stuff is going on YouTube. That was not me. That was a Porkfest organizer guy you know very well from this show, Jason Osborne, and in charge of the technical aspects of that, a guy named James Schlesinger. Oh, that's German, isn't it? Oh, I probably butchered it. JJ. So great job, guys. Thanks for catching all of this stuff. Big thanks to Jake for doing this, and I strongly encourage you to check out his podcast, The Voluntary Life. I also like to say a quick thanks to Kirk McNeil, a Free Stater who wasn't able to attend this event, but I talked to him about what I was planning and he gave me some solid advice and direction. So that's it. I hope you enjoy this and more stuff coming very soon. Take care.
Mr. Brett Vinat.
Let's hear it for Osborne one time. He's done a great job with Porkfest so far. He doesn't even need to wear that hat for you to know that he is a very important guy. And a couple more people who never get recognized, but I've gotten real into the behind-the-scenes stuff lately. So that man over there working the cameras and making sure all this stuff ends up on YouTube, JJ and his crew, Paul, and the guy who set up all the lightings, who is somebody who helped me out quite a bit in the past. His name is Kurt. I don't see him in here today. But the first rule, so let's hear it for those guys. Because the first rule of making a speech is that you want to build momentum for yourself on other people's hard work and accomplishments. So you get the crowd into that. Now, the second rule of making a speech is you want to establish credibility. But we're going to throw that one out because what I'm going to do is start today by telling you the story of probably the biggest blunder in my recent career. Anyway, I'm sure if we go back for enough in time, I could find another one. But here's how, if things go perfectly, this is what's going to happen today. So basically, here's a brief synopsis of how things are not going to go. But what I would like to have happen is I'm probably going to talk for 15 or 20 minutes. And then I'm going to bring up a guy named Jake DeSillis, who's from across the pond. He lives in England. He does a podcast called The Voluntary Life. And this is a podcast dedicated to finding freedom in an unfree world. Jake focuses a lot on a skill that is really, really underdeveloped in public education, and that's entrepreneurship. So I'm going to bring him up here to talk about some of the missing lessons from school. If we have time left at the end, if anybody else wants to grab this mic down here, because this is going to be a podcast, and one of the things that I've been trying to do on my show lately is bring in new voices into what we're doing. So we started this live show. It's been me, Osborne, the guy back there, Mandrick. Let's hear it for him. He's been a host of the show. And what we do is we take calls. So people can call in. They can ask us for advice. They can offer advice on whatever the problem or issue is that we're discussing.
And there's plenty of wisdom in this room today, I'm sure. So with the time we have left, here's a theme that if you want to come up and grab the mic, what would your fantasy commencement speech be? If you were asked to speak at a high school graduation, what would you say to those youngsters, or a college graduation, which is not much different these days? So, like I said, I wanted to start by talking about one of the biggest missteps in my recent career. And it was, you know, it was an accident, but here's what happened. About a year ago, I started working with this boy, homeschooler, but more of an unschooled, very self-directed environment. I was just there to support or compliment what he wanted to do. At one point, he became very interested in this idea of making a stop-action Lego animation pirate movie. And the blunder on my part, the mistake that I made was, for some reason, I don't know what came over me, but I just became extremely overzealous about this project. I got very, very excited about it. And I said, he said, what I want to do, he said, I want to make this movie, but the first thing we're going to do is we're going to build a pirate ship out of Legos. And I said, yeah, that's great, but then we need a story, and we need to write a script. And all of a sudden, I was just lost in enthusiasm for this project. And I was like, oh, we're going to need a bad guy. Who's the antagonist going to be? Oh, how about we make it the British Royal Navy, and we set it in the 18th century? And then in the end, you find out that the pirates and the Navy are doing the same thing, and there really is no good guy. And this all just happened within, like, in a couple minutes. And then there was a princess, and there was a magic staff, and I was trying to figure out the significance of the magic staff. And somewhere in the midst of all this, he just goes, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, I wasn't looking for fame or fortune. I wasn't looking to, like, snag any of the glory that might come with a successful YouTube Lego animation movie. Something just came over me, but his assessment of the situation, I realized in retrospect, was that he had lost control. He had lost control of this project. That I accidentally, you know, just trying to be enthusiastic, maybe not paying attention to the signals that he was giving back to me, I had taken the project over. And even though, like, I might have had the best of intentions, I was stealing the satisfaction that he wanted to get from these smaller tasks. From, I just want to build a pirate ship. I just want to make a set. And maybe that's all it needed to be. Maybe the big thing, the big goal, wasn't what was important. So I pretty much sabotaged this whole experience, and we never wound up making the pirate movie. We did work on it after this, but it just never materialized. And I tried to correct it. I tried to go back and say, oh, yeah, whatever you want to do, however you want to do it. But just in these 10 minutes, I saw the impact on, you know, 1 9-year-old boy of not having their creativity acknowledged, not having their volition, their goals respected, and what that did from the start of our session together, where he's pumped about this, to 10 minutes later, where he doesn't want to do it. And it was my fault. And this, like I said, I know I keep saying this, but 10 minutes. So take those 10 minutes, multiply it by, oh, man, I worked this out ahead of time. Now I forget the math. 90,000, I think? And that's a public school education, right? Where there's never any dialogue with a teacher where you're like, I think you have a little bit too much control over the situation, and I'd like to get some of it back for myself, like in this project. That's never something that even enters into a child's head. So to see what it looks like when a child has this enthusiasm and has this freedom, and then have it taken away, how much it can change in 10 minutes, I think it's really important to point out the long-term impact that that has on a lot of people, and many of us. You know, I think, who, raise your hand if you went to public school? It's usually about 90%, and that roughly was there, of any crowd. So on my show, School Sucks Podcasts, needless to say, I have to devote quite a bit of time to talking about problems. And I hope that if we look at things from enough different angles, and like I don't like to get stuck in really negative things, but when something comes up, I like to deal with it, and I like to try to cover all the bases, because I'm hoping, really, that even if somebody isn't into these ideas, if they stumble across this, if they're a teenager, if they're an adult, I recently realized as I'm trying to move everything to YouTube that kids not the biggest podcast fans, you know, they're mostly on YouTube. So we're trying to go there now, but it's not just a show for kids. And I think that even for me, all of these things that I realized when I thought I was at the end of this journey, maybe you've had an experience like this. You think you're at like, oh yeah, I get it. And you realize you're kind of at the beginning. Like just for example, I started playing the guitar, right? And you kind of, there's this hill that goes to a horizon that you can't see. So I learned three chords and I said, then I learned, you know, to play them together and said, well, I should start a band. You know, I didn't realize how much further there was that you could go. And I think it's true with a lot of this recognizing and dealing with childhood trauma that comes from school, that can come from family, that can come from religion and culture as well. So these are the things that we're trying to deal with on the show. But one of the questions that I've received frequently from adults, from parents, is they say, what happens if I have to send my student to public school? And I think some people might say, why would somebody have to send their kid to public school? But people have given me situations in the past where they say, well, me and my wife got divorced. She's not on board with this homeschooling, unschooling, peaceful parenting thing. And, you know, things are kind of like not the best relationship between me and her. And she wants the kids in school and has rejected these ideas that are important to me, or vice versa. Sometimes it could be in economic factors. You know, the child is too young. There's no network to plug into. Both parents have to work. Laurette Lynn, who is the host of Unplugged Mom, was telling a story on Jake's podcast, actually, a few weeks ago about she lived in New York when she discovered, yeah, I can't have my kids in these schools. Now, in New York, anyone from New York? People in New York, most people in New York, they think like the state and all of its institutions is pretty kick-ass. You know, they really like it. And a lot of people were threatened. They called her crazy. They called her abusive. Like, imagine trying to get support in Manhattan for, you know, this kind of idea. I'm going to liberate my kids before they even went into the school. And, like, people threatened to call social services. So sometimes you're just missing the network. And if you don't have the resources or the community, your kids might have to wind up in the schools. And another interesting thing that happens is sometimes kids reach an age where they want to go to school if they haven't been there before. That's kind of where the dating pool is. So by the time somebody gets to be 12, 13, I've heard people say that, yeah, they wanted to go to school. So when people ask me this question, what should I do? I don't really think it's so much about what do you need to do, but what do you need to know and what do you make sure, what should you make sure not to do? So it is important to point out that having a child, putting a child into the public school system today is a high-risk operation for sure. And if I was up here giving this advice 15 years ago, I would probably say to most people, look, the worst thing that could happen is that they could get expelled, right? So because everything is kind of like, you know, argument from authority, appeal to force. That's how everything in school works, right? So do your homework. If you don't, you'll get in trouble. If you get in trouble, you'll get detention. If you don't go to detention, you'll get suspended. If you don't do this, and ultimately the final thing is that you get expelled. And so that's the worst thing that they could threaten you with. But today, that's changed. Things are different. I was listening to NPR, and they have a show called This American Life. It's like a soft news, sort of more expository stories about different things. And on Valentine's Day, they had a show called What I Did for Love. And it's this 18-year-old boy who's a high school student, and he tells this story of how he... This girl, this new girl shows up at school, And she's very attractive, and he gets really into her, and she starts putting pressure on him to help her, the new girl, get some pot. Does anyone think this story is going to have a happy ending? Okay. So eventually, after this girl using the fact that the boy finds her attractive, that he wants to date her, she pressures him into getting marijuana, and he tries to give it to her as a gift, but she forces him, or insists, and kind of, you know, pressures him, which is easy to do considering that he's romantically interested in this girl, to take the money. I'll feel bad if you don't take the money. And a couple weeks later, he's being taken out of the school in handcuffs, and his dream girl is a 25-year-old undercover 21 Jump Street-style police officer. And this is some of the laziest police work I've ever heard of, right? A 25-year-old attractive girl not going after, like, maybe the supplier. Like, I think of, it's hard for me to think of, like, real hardworking cops, but, like, what you would think they would do is they try to find, like, who's bringing drugs into the school and make a big bust. She makes a drug dealer out of this kid and just busts him, and they move on. And it certainly is entrapment. But, you know, he was convicted with a felony. He wanted to join the military. Happy ending. He couldn't be in the military with a felony. So the point is that it has become a much more high-risk operation than just dealing with this arbitrary authority of these little people in the schools who try to make themselves feel important by bullying kids. But for the most part, now, I've spent a lot of time in these schools. The people in these buildings are totally sane and totally decent folks who are just blindly obedient to a completely insane system. And I think we've heard stories, if you're familiar with my show, we've dealt with a lot of this insanity. The biggest example, probably zero tolerance. And zero tolerance started with violence, right? Which is understandable, right? Zero tolerance for violence. We have a zero tolerance for violence here, non-defensive violence. And then it moved on to drugs, right? But then from violence, it moved on to chicken fingers. Like pointing chicken fingers at each other and saying, bang, bang, is violence. From drugs, it moved on to Advil. It moved on to inhalers. And then eventually, it moved on to BMI. Your body mass index. Now, some of the things that are being proposed in schools, if they were just proposed, like in a meeting, in a school board meeting, completely out of context, the person making the proposal would probably be taken out of the meeting in a straitjacket. Like, let's put body fat monitors on kids when they're at home. Straitjacket, you would think. But what's actually happening is that things have gotten so out of control that the most insane thing out of context just seems like the next logical step. These types of insane systems, I think through history we've seen that when a system like this is questioned frequently and en masse and effectively, it will end. And I think there is something exciting about having enlightened people in the schools. Obviously, I wouldn't, you know, if a parent said, I send my kid to public school to be an activist, I'm not into that, right? That's kind of using the kid maybe for your own agenda. If a kid wants to do that, and I've met kids who do want to do that, then I think that's fine, but that's different. But there's not enough people asking the questions that are in everybody's head. You know, like when I walk into a high school, it's just like, I describe it, it's like the sound of hundreds of bullshit detectors going off in silent alarm mode simultaneously. But nobody wants to say anything because these kids have no voice, they have no recourse, they have no outlet for any of this stuff. So for a lot of them, they suffer in silence. And what stops people, I think, is that we are trained in school, even though we are naturally rational, we want to remove contradictions, we want to find solutions, we want to find more convenient ways of doing things. There's also this message in school that I think affects a lot of people, which is They want easy answers. They want to be told about panaceas, and they want scapegoats, and they want shortcuts, and they don't really want to do any of the hard work. You know, they don't want to do any of the hard thinking. There's a real intellectual laziness. And the more I started to think about this, and what's the easiest thing for people to do is just be in denial about it, to not face what's going on. Like, parents have these, I've heard parents say, like, oh, well, yeah, I acknowledge the problems that you're talking about, but there are some good people in the schools teaching there, you know, so it's okay. Yeah, and I mean, there's some good people in Manhattan, but you wouldn't leave an 8-year-old there unattended. I think that would be a very, very hard thing to justify. What's that? That's too over the top, man. Detroit, come on. The more I thought about this, one more example of this kind of denial is, I remember this interaction that I was having with a couple family members, where my nephew, who's about 11, was failing social studies class. So I jumped into the conversation and I said, "Well, my brother." His stepfather had to go to a meeting at the school. And I said, "So you're going to ask the teacher what she's doing wrong? Like, why doesn't this smart kid enjoy social studies, which is history? So you're going to make it about the teacher?" I said it kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I was serious, because it's not a problem with the kid. And the feedback that I got was, "Oh, don't do that. You don't want to make trouble for the teacher, because she might get mad and take it out on the boy." And I'm like, is this seriously the conversation that we're having? We're going to pretend that there is not a problem with what's going on here so we don't offend an adult woman? So, and then she have her retaliate on an 11-year-old boy? No, that was what they were going to do. And it was, and what the discussion turned into was like, well, you got to get good grades. You know, you'll be happy later that you got good grades. So at this point, I interjected and I said, to the boy, we'll call him Steve. "Steve, what are you studying in social studies?" And he said something like the Oregon Trail, right? So everybody who, all these adults, these finger-pointing adults are saying good grades. I said, "How about what we do is everyone will go around the room and we'll tell a story about a fact we know about the Oregon Trail, how it helped us in life, and maybe some of the magic that we remember when we first learned about it. In other words, shut up and leave this kid alone, please." One of the things that school engenders is helplessness and dependence, and we wanted to move the discussion on to what happens after school. And yeah, you can, you on?
Yeah, I'm okay. On.
So what's the elevator speech for your podcast? Because we've been trying to work together for a while on this.
Yeah,
it's the perfect follow-up.
So my podcast is really about ways of finding freedom in your own life. I'm particularly interested in entrepreneurship because that's my background. I've been an entrepreneur for a long time. But I'm interested in what you can do, you know, to find more freedom in all aspects of life. So I also do a lot of interviews with people who have things to say on the subject. So, for example, in relation to your podcast, I've done a lot of interviews with people who are unschooling on that as an opportunity to find more freedom when you're raising your children for them in terms of their learning process. But I think, anything to do with really actionable things that you can do to find freedom in your life, that's what the voluntary life is about.
Yeah, and it seems like there's a lot of freedom that needs to be found. As I was just go through the list of your shows, it's like freedom from this, freedom from that, all of these things that have trapped people, and they've just been conditioned to be these dependents. So you have a list of a few things that you think are certainly skills that are undeveloped in school that we wanted to expand on a little bit today. Because what I was trying to deliver here with the story is what kids need is for people to get out of their way. And if you have to send your child to a public school you might need to do. Like, people say, oh, well, that's lazy. I don't think it is, because I think you might need to do more than maybe some homeschool parents or unschool parents do, because you have to be involved in a different way. But your involvement, I don't think, should be with the student, right? Like, they don't need two arguments from authority coming at them. They don't need one person saying, oh, well, this is like the fake way it is, and then the parent saying, well, this is the real way it is. They just need to develop those skills for their own, but they're just turned into total intellectual dependence. What they need is for people to get the hell out of their way so they can develop these skills on their own. But I will say this, a little bit of practical advice. You do want to be more involved on the school end, I think. You want to earn this reputation, like back to the story of don't bother the teacher. You want to earn the reputation of the person who, the parent, who is going to make work for people at that school. That is their, from my experience, least favorite kind of person. And Laurette Lynn also had this story about how when she was talking about how she wanted to send her kid to public school in Manhattan, she decided that 2 years before the kid would go there, she would go and interview the administrators. So she went in, she said, I got a kid coming here in a couple years, what's going on? And the person just looked at her like, it couldn't even believe it. It was like, I think you just fill out these forms. Right, I think you just do paperwork. I don't think I answer questions. So you don't want to... it's a mistake that I made when I was a teacher, like trying to say, okay, here's all the crap you've been told your whole life. Now here's the way it really is. And I was a liberal at the time, so I was pretty wrong about most of it. Considering that people come out of these schools with this kind of dependence... what are some of the ways that you think are really important that they move towards more individual liberty?
Yeah, I think, well, one of the things that comes to mind from what you were talking about is just how, I mean, you've talked about this on your show many times, how compulsory schooling really sets up a mentality of conformity and of preparing for a job. And, you know, the whole way that you're treated in school is the idea is that you have to, you know, jump through these hoops in order to show that you're able to be a responsible job person. You know? Yeah. And really, you know, what I think is the opposite end of that is the opportunity that you have to work for yourself, whether that's as you know, in a kind of unjobbing situation where you're a freelancer and you're getting income from many different sources, or whether it's through entrepreneurship. And I think, you know, one of the best things that you can do to try and overcome some of the sort of legacy of being in school for that long is just to try it, just to actually get out there and do entrepreneurship as soon as you can, even if you're still in school, to just try and start your own business. Because it doesn't matter if you try 10 things and none of them actually make you any money, you're still going to learn a huge amount doing it. And it's a fantastic way to actually get some of the independence and some of the, you know, the real learning about, you know, taking your own life into your own hands and actually reclaiming your independence in that way.
Or at least going through this, because, I mean, like, entrepreneurs talk about living in their car, failing a bunch of times. Like, what better time to start if you have to be in school to start trying out some of these things where, you know, you can at least learn from your mistakes, and maybe you don't. Maybe you're not an 18-year-old millionaire, but you've developed some independence that will lead to eventually financial independence.
Absolutely, yeah. Because, I mean, you really... Obviously, people go and study MBAs and do this kind of thing to learn entrepreneurship, but actually, I think that is all really abstract and irrelevant compared to just doing it and going out and finding an opportunity to provide value to other people. And when you're doing that, you know, you're really working for your own freedom, and you're making one person freer, which is yourself, but you're also providing value to others, which is, you know, that's a really revolutionary thing to do, to go out there and change the world through entrepreneurship by making the world a better place and providing something that that doesn't exist at the moment to people who are willing to pay for it and give you value for the value that you're giving them. Now, that's a fantastic thing to learn. And it's actually completely the opposite of what you learn in school, because it's all about you finding out for yourself. And rather than, you know, being told that you have succeeded because you have passed various exams, reality will tell you whether you succeeded, because you'll find out whether or not people are willing to pay for what it is that you're doing.
Right. Now, you didn't go to public school.
Yeah, I went to a state school in the UK.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I went into higher education for a long time afterwards. I did an MSc and a PhD, so I know about being in the educational system. And it took me a long time to realize that actually it's a lot more rewarding and a lot more fun to go out there and you know, start a business and provide value that way. And I think that, you know, it really is a totally different life being out there doing entrepreneurship than being in education. The other thing I wanted to say was also that I think the other thing, just thinking of how you can deprogram yourself from compulsory education, the other thing that I think is really important is to get financial independence from your parents as soon as possible.
Yes.
That's something that when you've been in school, especially if you're looking to go to college, which is obviously the kind of typical ideal route that, you know, you want to get out of school and go to college and then you get a good degree and then you'll get a good job. You get into a situation, or many people do, where they're still financially dependent on their parents well into their adult lives. And it's kind of an extension of childhood in a way. And actually, there's a really interesting book called The Millionaire Next Door, where he talks about some studies that he did of people who gained financial independence from their parents earlier and later, and he compares their later incomes. And unsurprisingly, the people who become financially independent earlier end up making a lot more money, because they actually have the experience of knowing what it is like to go out there and work for yourself, or get a job if that's what you want to do, or start a business. And I think, personally, I think that gives you a better relationship in your family as well, because it means that you can, you know, as you grow up, you can have a relationship with your parents based on whatever, you know, value you get from and love you get from that relationship, rather than because you're hanging around because they help you out with your mortgage on your first home, or they help you out when you're, you know, when you need somewhere to go and stay and so forth. So I think that's another thing that, in a way, schooling doesn't really set you up for, but actually is a part of growing up and being independent. And the sooner you do it, the more freedom you have.
Yeah, you know, I think, and you were talking a little bit too about I don't know if you would chalk it up as a misstep of spending all this extra time in school. It sounds like you would a little bit.
No, I actually had a great time. I enjoyed it, but I do think it was a missed opportunity for having done entrepreneurship earlier.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, in that sense, that's definitely a missed opportunity.
Because one of the things that I remember, and I remember first thinking about this at a very young age, or being aware of this idea, but it never really went away, was that life was something that will happen later, you know? And for a lot of people, it's sad, but it never really happens, you know? Like, really, you know, working some self-directed, finding real satisfaction in what they're doing, they just kind of continue to go through this maze. And for me, like, school was like, it was like shoveling snow. You know, like, that was, it was that kind of activity. Like, I hate snow, I hate shoveling snow, but I need to get it the hell out of the way so I can actually go someplace. And that conditioning just lasts so long, it just becomes so programmed into us that I think a lot of people, yes, they want to go to 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th grade, and then is there a 17th and an 18th grade? I'll go there too, you know? And they just delay that inevitable of, like, getting out into the world, being on their own, because life is something that happens later.
Absolutely. And there is the, you know, I guess you're so indoctrinated into the conformity that goes with that, that, you know, if you get good grades, then you somehow have achieved something.
Yeah.
And that really, I think that takes your mind off all of the wonderful things that you can achieve in real life. You know, I mean, for example, another thing that school never even comes close to getting you to think about or sort of takes your mind off completely is, you know, some of the goals that you can have for having more freedom in your life. Like, for example, financial freedom. You know, when you go through the education system, you get set up for a situation where you're working in a job, you're making a wage, you have high taxes, you have high expenses to go with the kind of lifestyle that is the sort of, I guess, mainstream lifestyle. You take out a mortgage, you have lots of debt, and you're in this situation where even if you're earning good money, so many people are living paycheck to paycheck because that's sort of the just the kind of typical career path that you get into. Whereas, you know, if you're interested in freedom, I think trying to find a way where you can get sources of passive income, where you can, you don't even necessarily have to have that much income if you have low expenses, where you can get to a point where you have financial freedom, where you can work on the things that really you love, that make you happy, rather than having to work a job in order to pay for that lifestyle that school really sets you up for.
And do you think that this would all be more it seems like this would be more natural for people. Like when I look at how a lot of kids are at 6, 7 years old, if no one had meddled, you know, so much in their lives, if they hadn't made it about, you know, what you should really do is please other people. Yeah, and work sucks and it's in your way, but that's life. You know, that this would be a more natural progression and it would happen faster for most people instead of really, unfortunately, like never happening for most people. Like, what percentage of people are entrepreneurs? I would think it's relatively small.
It's tiny. And yeah, I think it would be a natural progression because when you think about it, if you're in school and you have a band,
yeah,
you know, that's sort of entrepreneurship. You get together with a group of friends, you try and get gigs. You know, normally you don't make that much money, but at least it's a project. And entrepreneurship is just an extension of that kind of doing something that you love and doing something you're interested in project in adult life. And I think, yeah, the sooner you can start doing that, the more experience you can have to actually get the freedom from doing it. And school does just get in the way of that.
Yeah, and there was a story about this, of a kid who wanted to drop out of school because he had all of these things that he wanted to do and he was really talented. And all of this school stuff, it was just in the way. It was nothing for him to get, and it was only stopping him from achieving what he wanted to do. So he left. And I think that a lot of people never even realize that that's an option. You know, it is that there is that quiet resignation, like, oh, you know, too bad things are this way. Because if they weren't this way, I could really, you know, I could do what I wanted. I could be satisfied. I could be happy. That I think that's the feeling for most people.
Yeah. I mean, I had... I guess I was lucky that I had somebody who I knew through my family who was an entrepreneur who I could sort of talk to about what he was doing and how he started his business. And I got a bit of an insight into it that way. But I certainly never had any kind of encounters with entrepreneurship at school whatsoever. You know, it's completely the opposite. If you go to careers advice at school, then they talk about what kind of job you want to have. And the idea of starting your own business doesn't really even come into it.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to kind of bring it full circle with my story about this boy, if parents do have to do... I mean, what's in the way of learning is school and overbearing parents, in my opinion. Like, human beings have a real desire to get contradictions and problems out of their way. And if you have to have your kids in school, I know it's an unfortunate situation. There's no way in hell that I can recommend it, but I do understand that things happen. The wife or husband who's divorced is not on board, financial reason, you have a teenage kid who wants to go so they can have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Don't become a part of the argument from authority. You know, like if kids have these natural gifts maintained, I mean, eventually what I realized is all I had to do for this boy who I accidentally meddled with one day was to be a cheerleader for the enthusiasm and the confidence and the creativity and curiosity that he already had. And he, you know, got into a habit and I hope that habit continues. I don't work with him anymore, of setting goals for himself, and they could be small. They don't have to be big. They don't have to be big budget Lego animation movies with complex storylines like I want to make. It can just be the little goals along the way that he can find real satisfaction. And you know, from my experience, I learned a lot about what my job should be. And I wanted to bring Jake up because I think we're both, even though we like doing these podcasts, we're kind of hoping for a day where school sucks is not a shocking statement or a newsflash, and the voluntary life is not some kind of novel or unheard of concept. So thank you very much for coming. If you have any questions, we'll take them. Come on up. It's not part of this presentation.
Just wanted to share an experience. We've just finished ushering our daughter through public education. And we had an interesting situation with her in the sense that she would go to school. She was bright. She was intelligent. She was articulate. She was forceful. She was her own thinker. And she was a troublemaker.
Yeah.
I got more calls from her principal than I did from her teachers. And it wasn't because of the fact that she couldn't do the work. She just simply decided to rebel against the whole concept. Mm-hmm. And it was a real hair puller for us. The problem was, is I recognized myself in her in the sense that I was the same way. I mean, I got C's in high school. And that's only because I just refused to do the work. They knew I knew the material. But the amount of peer pressure and the amount of pressure from the school to conform got to the point where literally we were in a situation where we got a phone call from the vice principal where they basically said, we have two choices. She can leave the school right now and we'll give her her diploma, but she needs to leave today. Or we can try working through this, but she's probably going to be expelled. What would you like? And I said, well, give her the diploma. She doesn't need this. And
how old was she? I'm sorry.
Oh, well, she's 18.
Okay.
She's just graduated, thank God. And but the point of it is that she's come out of the school and she didn't get an education. She got one long socialization experiment. And whatever she's picked up on her own as far as I'm concerned. It just struck me that the school basically was teaching her how to conform, and that was about it. And hopefully she'll grow out of whatever it is that they try to indoctrinate her with.
And did you feel like there was anything that you had to do along the way? Because, you know, were you more focused on dealing with administrators and you said teachers or whatever, but how about with her? I mean, was there any, if you don't mind sharing, was there any? Yeah.
Well, now that the experience is over with, I was always conflicted through the whole thing. Again, because with my own experience, you know, basically the teachers just wanted me to shut up and do the work. And that just simply wasn't the way I was brought up. But at the same time, the amount of peer pressure for me as a parent, I mean, quite literally, I was treated as an abusive parent because I wasn't as shocked and aghast by her behavior as the administration was.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I've heard that this is, you know, kids being taken away from their parents for homeschooling, stuff like that. It's interesting that it's almost the opposite that's really true, that I think if you've understood a lot of these ideas for some time, that probably translated pretty well into parenting and then into her thinking.
Well, I would hope so. I mean, I had to play the role of parent. You know, this is all you need to do in order to accomplish the end. We literally sat down and we said, all right, what is it that they're presenting? What do you know? Where are your grades coming from? Where are these discipline issues coming from? And primarily, it was just simply she wasn't going to conform.
Right.
And it's like, okay, well, here are your choices. You know, this is what you're confronted with. You make your choices. And, you know, we would like for you to get through high school, get your diploma, and move on with life. But at the same time, she has to deal with it on a daily basis.
Well, and I think if any kid comes from an environment of, you know, rational, peaceful, enlightened parenting, the real messages of school just don't stick. Like this provisional self-esteem, like you're good when we tell you that you are, when mm-hmm. you please us, the confusion, the dependence, the conformity, the obedience, the collectivism, It never really takes hold. Like, I would think that if a child was raised in that environment, school would just seem like a Saturday Night Live skit or something, you know, just completely foolish, mm-hmm. like a parody of pretty much adult society.
Right.
But kids don't speak, kids who are raised in that environment don't speak that language.
Right. You know,
so it's amusing.
Right.
It's not crushing like it is for kids who are not prepared mm-hmm. at home to have the intellectual self-defense they need to deal with that environment.
Well, the thing of it is that they talked about critical thinking and being your own person and being responsible for your own time. And then when someone actually demonstrated independent thinking, critical thinking, and being independent,
right.
they become troublemakers. Meanwhile, students who basically learn to conform and do very little else are basically rewarded by the system.
Absolutely. So thank you very much for sharing. I really appreciate that. This gentleman is Alec. Alec, you can applaud for him. You can applaud for these. Not enough applause. Where was all the applause? Nice. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I want to say I'm a longtime fan of School Sucks podcast, and I would highly recommend checking it out. And I've not heard of Voluntary Life, and I'm very excited to hear about what you're talking about. Is that correct, Voluntary Life?
Yes, thevoluntarylife.com.
Thevoluntarylife.com. Couldn't say more good things about entrepreneurship. And I just wanted to say a quick thing myself. Fear prevented me from starting my own business for the longest time. And a couple of years ago, I finally sucked it up and took the risk, and I figured out how to make it work for myself. In your opinion, what are the biggest barriers to entrepreneurship? What are the hurdles that people have the most trouble overcoming? Fear being mine, everybody else is different, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, I really understand the fear, especially because, as we've been talking about, it's so alien, the idea of entrepreneurship, to schooling and to the messages that you receive in school. So I totally understand that. And I think one of the other things to say about barriers is just that, obviously, the more responsibilities that you have and the more you have, well, especially financial responsibilities, the harder it is to have the opportunity to start a new business and to really, you know, take the opportunity to set something up. That's why I think it's really important to talk about trying entrepreneurship, if you can, when as young as possible. Because if you have kids, if you have a mortgage, if you have a lot of expenses, then, you know, the risk of having income that's uncertain during that early period is a real problem. It's really difficult. So I think that can be a barrier. The more responsibilities you've already taken on, in particular debt, you know, if you have a lot of debt, or you have mortgage debt and so forth, then you can be in a situation where you feel like, well, I've got to stay in this job to pay for the expenses that I've got to keep everything going. So I think I see that as one of the real barriers that people perceive to entrepreneurship. You know, obviously there's ways of approaching that too, but I guess the main thing I would say from that is to really take the opportunity when you don't have a lot of financial obligations to just go for it. Because worst case scenario, as long as you're not sinking a huge amount early on, if it's the kind of business where you need big capital investment, that's maybe a different matter. But, you know, the worst thing that can happen is that you learn a huge amount through the process, and that in itself is really valuable. That's worth more than than doing an MBA. But I think that if you do have a lot of debt and a lot of financial obligations, then it's worth thinking about how you can reduce your expenditure and how you can make yourself have less pressure to continue staying in a job. Before you are able to really to do entrepreneurship. That would be what I think is one of the main barriers.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Alec. And we got time maybe for one or two more.
I'm actually in high school right now.
Okay.
And I've actually been basically an entrepreneur since I was like 13 or so. I've been fixing computers. And I think it's really true. If you ask most high schoolers, like, how do you feel about work? It's really, like, something they want to get out of the way. They don't want to be, like, a producer. They want to, you know, sit around this, like, it's a, like, hindrance to them. And if you ask them, like, oh, you know, do you have, like, a job? They're like, well, they don't want to get the job until they have to. It's like they don't want to be an adult. They want to be a kid, and, like, they feel like they're a kid their whole life, or at least, you know, as far as they've been. And it's like there's no, like, it's very abstract how they get from being, like, a kid in school to being grown up. Like, in Maine, where I'm from, the governor just endorsed one school for saying, like, having an optional fifth year for students. So the governor's actually saying, like, hey, kids, go to school for another year. You know, put off entering the job market even further.
Yeah.
And it's just like they're trying to put them back and say, like, no, you can't. You know, you have to just keep doing the same thing and not advance, not, you know, learn your own things. It's just, it's absurd, the whole thing.
So when you talk about, you know, doing these things that are entrepreneurial, did you get any pushback from parents, from anyone at the, any authority figures that you talked to about doing this? Like,
I really didn't talk to people about doing it. I just went out and do it. I mean, like, my parents were very supportive of it. My dad's pretty much a libertarian. My mom's pretty much one as well, although she's more, you know, a left-leaning libertarian.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've been very supportive of it all. They give me rides if I'm going for longer distances. And, you know, so that's been pretty helpful. I think some of the school people that I have talked to about it have been a little questioning of, you know, whether that's good. I mean, I do very well in school anyway, so I can always say, well, you know, my grades are good, so just leave me alone.
Yeah, you know, I wonder, and maybe it's a little different for everybody, is it sort of this Michael Jackson syndrome of, I never had a childhood, so I want to be one, I want to find every opportunity I can have to be one as long as possible, or is it just like there is so much encouragement in the schools to not mature emotionally, as far as independence, really intellectually, financially, any of these things that we're talking about? What do you think?
Well, I think that, like, because they won't give the kids the independence,
yeah,
the kids can't feel independent. So they're stuck in this, like, mindset where, you know, if people aren't giving them the freedom to do what they want, they're not giving them the encouragement to go out and, you know, do something they love, they don't feel like they're allowed to. They don't feel like they're able to. They're not willing to take that first step of just do it, you know? Like, you can't just ask, if you just spend your whole life asking permission, if you're able to start your business or whatever, you're just going to be way behind everybody who just does it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to say, by the way, I think that's awesome what you're doing. That's fantastic. And there is an interview on my podcast with a guy who started out fixing computers in school, and he went on to found a whole series of businesses, and it's quite a fun interview. Check it out. It's called Successful Entrepreneurship on the podcast. But he started doing exactly what you're doing in school as well. So, yeah, I think that's fantastic. Yeah. And I think also one of the reasons that comes to mind for me why some people, what you're experiencing with a lot of people saying, oh, I don't really want to work and it's a pain in the ass, is because it is. I mean, it can be stressful, can be difficult, and there are benefits from using school as a time where you kind of just switch off your brain. I mean, a lot of people, that's sort of what school encourages, and it's very easy to do. And so I think seeing entrepreneurship and as a stressful hassle and a waste of time is something that fits very easily with the mindset that you get at school. And it's only if you can see that it's actually an opportunity to get more freedom and to get more opportunity for yourself that you can, in a sense, overcome that. So I think it's great. Congratulations.
Thanks.
And what was your name?
My name is William.
William, thank you very much for sharing that with us. And was there one more thing you wanted to say?
Yeah, I think I was very lucky because I was actually homeschooled until eighth grade. And that's right about that year, the last year or the year before when I was homeschooled was when I started working on computers for money.
Yeah.
And then I actually said to my mom, like, I want to go to, public school because, like, I didn't do sports. I didn't really do any like quote unquote extracurricular activities from the school. So I didn't have a chance to meet anyone my age. I was feeling lonely. Now I was able to bring the same mindset of homeschooling kind of into my school life, which I think has helped a lot. But I couldn't imagine starting out in public school. I have a sister who went much earlier than I, and it's very interesting to see how she is different there.
Yeah, I would think if you had been a self-teacher for, you know, the first several years before going to high school would be kind of hilarious. But I'll tell you what, live shows on Thursday night, if you want to come up and do a segment with us, that would be absolutely fantastic. I'd love to have you. We have to get off stage for the next event. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.